We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hills, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
The baseball season is go, go, go. It's nonstop, relentless for every night, six straight months, and then hopefully another month in October. You also have work, friends, family, and a million other things going on. That's when you reach for a Coors Light. It's made to chill. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. I mean, the mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. Is there anything better than opening up your refrigerator after a long day, seeing that icy cold Coors Light can or bottle in your fridge? The answer is no. There's nothing better. That's why, when it's time to chill, you choose Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So that's why, when you want to hit reset, reach for a beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 165. Scott, I know you are running on no sleep, and it looks like both of us are going to be running on no sleep starting on Monday morning.
Well, yeah, it's another Yankees-Red Sox game in Sunday night primetime baseball. ESPN and Major League Baseball loves to do this to us. And, of course, we have to record after this game, because how are we supposed to record a podcast talking about the Boston series when we don't see the last game? So they force us to record at midnight on Sunday because Aroldis Chapman is a loser and cannot finish a freaking game when the Yankees have the perfect opportunity to win a series and close a gap to 3.5 games. He can't do it. I mean, we're recording in the middle of this, and it's a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah, we're recording top of the 10th right now. Red Sox just took a 3-2 lead. So you can imagine Scott and I are in great moods at this very moment. Gardner just made a wild circus catch to retire that inning. But yeah, Chapman, like you said, he has been an absolute nightmare against the Red Sox this season. He either gets the save and it's somehow the Yankees luck into it, like Nunez running into an out at third base, classic Nunez fashion, helmet flying off, paying no attention to the situational baseball, or he gives up a home run and they blow the lead. It's been terrible with him and the Red Sox this season.
Yeah, and the bottom line with when you're looking at the contributing factors to every single one of these is the guy can't throw freaking strikes. He can't throw strikes. He gets behind in the count and then throws fastballs over the plate and people freaking hit them. And that's exactly what happened tonight with the freaking rookie who's been up for all of, what, 2-3 weeks, goes in and hits a 102.8 mile per hour fastball opposite field over the fence.
Well, you say he wasn't throwing strikes. I actually thought he looked pretty good tonight for a change. It was that one pitch. The second inning, let's disregard. He had already blown the save. He's not a two-inning pitcher. But in the ninth inning on Sunday night, he looked pretty good. I thought he looked a hell of a lot better on Sunday night than he did Friday when he actually got the save.
That's not saying much. He walked three dudes. But he got one out tonight before that home run. It wasn't like he was in there for a while and looked phenomenal. Okay, he looked good for one batter.
After that, too, though.
That is not enough for me to say he came in and looked good. Home run in a save situation to a rookie. Come on.
Lefty on lefty.
Terrible.
I also love how ESPN, before the inning, as Chapman was warming up, said, oh, he has not given up a home run this year. Thank you, ESPN, for rubbing that right in our faces, jinxing us.
Yeah, I mean, look, when you're just sitting on that fastball, he wasn't throwing the slider over the plate in that at bat, and this kid was just, you know, swinging at me. This just proves to you that everybody who's coming up now knows how to hit a damn fastball, and no matter how fast it is. I mean, he handled 102.8 and put it over, and it looked like it actually was off of the bottom of the barrel. Off the bat, I was like, maybe this thing has a chance to stay in. And it just stayed up and stayed up and stayed up. So he hit it hard. I think it was like 105 exit velo. I mean, most of that's
from
Chapman.
The harder they come in, the harder
Chapman.
They go out.
Yeah, I was going to say, most of that's Chapman. But he put wood on it, so.
We'll see how this result ends up tonight. Yankees have 2-3-4 coming up in the bottom of the 10th against Kimbrel, who I'm just realizing is much more of a ginger than I thought before tonight. His beard looks extra red tonight. I don't know if it's because he's got all that August heat in there, all that red, all that sun turned his beard extra red, but he looks extra gingery.
Well, every time I was talking about this today when we were watching the game, I'll never forget I think he was with the Padres. And he was playing the Braves, I think, when all the guys behind home plate, the people in the stands, were doing like making fun of him, doing the arm thing. Have you seen that clip? It's like the entire stand. It's hilarious. And he just looks like a buffoon. I think he looks like the biggest like jackass out there with his arm thing. I cannot handle it. Yeah,
giant
I don't know
tool.
Why the Red Sox always have to have a guy out there who either makes a butthole with their face, a la Papelbon. And then you get this douchebag who goes out there and like hangs his arms I don't even know what the hell he looks like. He looks like a jackass.
Well, this is a perfect segue into what I wanted to talk about. And I can tell you're feeling the same thing I am. There's some hatred for these Red Sox now. It took until late in the season, but we're starting to hate some of these guys. I hate Benintendi because he just looks annoying and absolutely murdered the Yankees on Saturday. I saw that picture of Mookie Betts rounding the bases. He was all fired up. That pissed me the hell off. I've always hated Hanley Ramirez. He's a scumbag and murders the Yankees as well. And yeah, Kimbrel with his little arm hang thing is just a giant tool. There's some hatred here, which is a good thing. Don't get me wrong. That's a good thing.
Yeah, it's a good thing, but it's not good when you hate them and then they freaking beat you in gut-wrenching situations. Or when Benintendi comes up for another at-bat against Severino after he hits a three-run shot and he just lets him hang all over the plate with no fear at all for throwing inside. And I know this is such a Girardi thing and it goes back to the Manny and Ortiz days because they were never really thrown at. They were never brushed off the plate. That was always a bugaboo with Yankee fans and it was just never called for and it was never done. And it's continuing and it's driving me nuts. You get a little freaking 12-year-old kid out there playing left field, hitting three or two bombs and driving in six runs and he's hanging all over the inside of the plate. Knock him on his ass. I don't get it. I don't understand it.
It doesn't really happen in baseball anymore. It's a lost art in baseball is the knockdown.
Max Scherzer would do it. There are a couple guys out there that'll do it. Yeah, and Severino needs to. I feel like the Yankees need to go back and like go to the well and bring in a guy like Clemens or something just to teach that type of attitude to the pitching staff. Because when you do have that attitude and when you do have the ability to go inside and the batter knows that you're a little crazy, just a little bit off, that's a big deal because then you're making that guy uncomfortable and you can then throw inside.
I think some of that attitude from Clemens came in the form of a bottle.
Well, you know what? Maybe he can bottle the attitude up and teach it. Maybe he can make some good from the steroid days.
before the Sunday night game, ESPN was shoving the rivalry down our throats once again. But, you know, I actually think I was buying it a little bit. This weekend, for whatever reason, I bought back into the rivalry. It's the first time in 6 years the Yankees and Red Sox have played each other this late in the season where they've been 1-2 in the division. And you and I have said, we've mocked that it's not a rivalry anymore. They're going to need to meet in the playoffs. They're going to need to play some meaningful games. They've got 10 games. Well, starting on Friday, they had 10 games in 3 weeks, and they were all set up to be meaningful games. I think that's the only way we're going to see this thing back. It was back this weekend.
Yeah, I agree. And the other thing is that I think we've wanted it back for so long. Like, this is something that, you know, we love to hate the Red Sox. We miss this rivalry. So the fact that they're actually playing meaningful games right now, I mean, you're right. We talked about that. This is what it was needed. There needed to be added drama, and actually drama on the baseball field, and tension for those emotions to come back out. So, you know, I can only hope, and I'm pretty disappointed that Clint Frazier got hurt at this point, because this would have been a great opportunity for him to fly off the rails and go after somebody. You know what I mean? Because I really felt like late in the season, Clint Frazier was the guy that had the ability to make something happen as far as, you know, a fight or just
you're looking for a
it.
Brawl, huh?
Oh, yeah.
You're looking for, yeah.
Yeah, I need some bad blood between the players, because it's not enough for where it's just that we hate these guys as fans. We need the players on the field to not like each other. And I feel like Frazier's the perfect person to go in and start that shit.
There's just not enough players who act like that anymore.
Yeah, but you just need one or two, and then your team's got your back. That's the thing. God. You just need that freaking catalyst. That's it.
Judge just struck out again. 3 strikeouts for him tonight. He looks absolutely lost. And he almost had that home run in his first at-bat, that foul ball home run.
Yeah.
He jumped out on Sale, but the dude is absolutely lost at the plate right now. He's killing the Yankees. He's batting third. And I actually got into this with my dad over the weekend. He said that they need to drop him out of the 3-hole. And I don't disagree with that, because he is a giant black hole in the middle of this order right now. But I hate the argument that just moving a guy out of the 3 spot or something like that is going to fix him. It's not going to fix him. You want to move him because he's killing the team, fine. But don't expect, just because you move him from 3 down to 6 or 7, that all of a sudden Judge is magically going to be fixed. That's not how it works.
Well, if it did work like that, you're basically saying that there's no or that there's another problem there, that there's an issue with the approach, the way that he feels pressure. And if it's a pressure thing and he can't hit in the 3 spot, then we got bigger problems, because then he's not handling the situation. And I agree. I don't think that's the case. I think he's struggling at the plate mechanically. I think he's in his own head. And, you know, moving down in the order is not going to change each at bat, in my opinion. You could still get a meaningful at bat like he's doing right now. Even if he's lower in the order, you could still get a meaningful at bat later in the game. That's, you know, they could be in a similar situation. I don't buy into that either, because, you know, they're still facing the same pitcher. Not really that big of a deal that he's hitting, you know, 2 or 3 spots in the order further.
It's 30 games now in a row that Judge has struck out. It's
approaching Adam Dunn territory.
2 behind Adam Dunn's 32 strikeout record. It looks like he's going to break that with ease. Judge might set the record that will never be broken. We talk about Joe DiMaggio's 56-game hitting streak. We talk about Cal Ripken Jr.'s 27-39 or whatever the hell it was. Does anyone who's not a Baltimore fan actually know what that number is? I don't think so. But we talk about that streak. Judge might set the new unbreakable record in baseball.
Well, first of all, I didn't even know this was a record that anybody ever talked about or even knew about until he started approaching, you know, consecutive strikeouts in a game, or strikeout games with a strikeout. I didn't even know this was a thing. So I guess it is. It's the Aaron Judge stat now, because it really wasn't a thing until Aaron Judge approached it. But here's the problem. This is the guy that we thought we knew had turned the corner, right? He can't slump. He didn't slump for the entire first half of the year. And now he's reverted back to 2016 Aaron Judge wholeheartedly. I mean, the guy's just striking out all the time, looks confused. The approach is bad, swinging at bad pitches. It's frustrating and it's worrisome to see what has happened, because it's now carried on a long time. It's not just a small slump anymore.
It's completely back to second half of last year, Aaron Judge. He's got a 46.2% before tonight, so it's probably up around 47, 48%.
Yeah.
K rate in the second half. He struck out 50% of the time last year in the second half, so he's almost back there. He'll hit his home run every 20 at bats or so, but he strikes out all the rest of the time, essentially. But he is the only positive, he's still taking walks. I think there was a stat tonight on ESPN. He's walking 21% of the time, which is basically double the league average. It's the only silver lining in Judge's last month of baseball.
And this is, I think this is going into the season, this is kind of what we expected. I think we expected minimal or like smaller improvements. I mean, certainly nothing what happened in the first half. And I think everybody and their brother was surprised what the hell Aaron Judge was doing in the first half of the season. So we expected, after seeing a 50% strikeout clip, that maybe he can make that adjustment and cut it down to 40 or maybe just 35. Like, that would be a tremendous, tremendous adjustment. And he's reverting back to where he was last season, which is, I don't know what you make of the first half of the year if he doesn't get back on the rails. I don't know what you make of this season. It's very confusing as to where he is as a baseball player.
I don't think he is this bad.
I don't think he's this bad either.
Someone who was that good for three straight months can't be this bad. It doesn't compute.
It can kind of go the other way too, though. I mean, someone
he's not who, that good
who is as bad as he was 50% clip for now. If you add the two of them, that's what, two months combined. About how can someone be that good? Yeah, I mean, it can
I
go
agree.
Either way.
That's exactly where I was going. So he's somewhere in the middle. Where that middle is, I don't know if the middle is closer to the MVP level player or if it's closer to the strikeout machine. I'm not sure, but it's somewhere in the middle. He just needs to find it.
Yeah. The other thing he's doing is he's playing defense. He's doing a good job. He's stealing bases. He stole a base the first inning tonight? I mean, there's other ways he can contribute. And I think he probably feels that he needs to contribute in other ways while he is this abysmal at the plate. But you're right. He's taking his walks. He's doing the little things in the field. He's running the bases well. So I don't know. He's got to figure this shit out. That's the bottom line. Start going the other way again. We've been talking about that. I do believe it's an approach thing, and it's a lot of it is very, very much mental.
This weekend marked 1 year of when he was called up. Can you believe we were at that game a year ago? Doesn't it seem like so much shit has happened just with the Yankees? Obviously, your life has turned upside down in the last year.
Jesus Christ.
But just with this Yankees team, we were at our Bronx Pinstripes event last year for just the guys on the website. A-Rod had his farewell goodbye night, and then Tyler Austin and Aaron Judge go back-to-back on that like steamy Saturday afternoon. It was 1,000 degrees. All that has happened in the last year.
Yeah, and now I'm watching the Red Sox play patty cake on the freaking outfield and do stupid, 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 stupid little cheers that they do in the outfield with each other. I can't stand them. This patty cake thing is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. How do you not throw a ball at somebody while they're in the batter's box after they do a patty cake celebration, hitting a 3-run bomb off of you? How do you let that guy stand there?
You know what this is? This is the Red Sox hate episode. It's about damn time we had a Red Sox hate episode.
I mean, really, how as a man can you stand there and not throw at a dude who just played patty cake after he hit a 3-run bomb off of you and then did it again? I don't get it. I don't get it. He needs to get some freaking balls and start throwing at these guys a little bit. You know, I'm not saying you got to hurt someone. I'm not saying you got to even hit them. Just how about we take control of the inside of the plate? How about that? How about we throw at their hands a little bit? They can get out of the way if they choose to. Throw at them a little bit so they can get them off the plate. Severino throws 99 miles per hour. Throw a freaking fastball at their hands.
So is Severino the guy? I feel like it's got to be... Maybe not. Maybe Sonny Gray would do that.
No.
Although he's too mild-mannered. Sabathia would do it if he was out there, but he's not out there.
You're right. That's why Severino needs to take the reins. He's got to be the new ace, quote, number one guy on this team. He's the leader of the rotation on the field. He needs to take the reins. He's the guy that throws hard. He's the one who got his ass handed to him by Andrew Benintendi and then played patty cake. He's the one who needs to go out there and establish the inside of that plate and establish himself as that feared ace.
What are you making of Severino's blow-up start, his first bad start of the second half on Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, that's just it, right? It's the first one in a very long time. So you got to chalk it up. The dude had a bad day, even though he started out very well in that game. you know, I don't know what happened. He lost concentration and he just lost it. I mean, it happens every once in a while. You can't destroy a guy for doing that every once in a while, because it's going to happen. I mean, you can't have an Aaron Judge first half of the season. Not many people do that.
I tweeted something on Saturday. People misconstrued it. I said it's a bad look for the people who said Severino is an ace today, as he gave up 2 5-run innings. I know he didn't get all of the earned runs in that second inning, but Yankees got absolutely trounced. To be clear, I was one of the people who was sitting here on this podcast calling Severino an ace. So
you're saying it's a bad look for you and the rest of the crew.
It's all it was. It was a bad look. It's a bad look start. It happens. I understand it happens. You just hope it doesn't happen in a game like that after they have an emotional win on Friday and you know you're facing Chris Sale on Sunday night. Severino, as the ace, needed to go in there and lock it down on Saturday. It didn't happen. I'm not saying his season is lost because of that one start. I'm not an idiot. All I'm saying is it was very, very disappointing to watch that on Saturday.
I think people have a misconception about what an ace needs to be. And I mean, you've been definitely on this side as well when you're talking about Tanaka in years past, about how in a game like that, I mean, you would absolutely crucify Tanaka if that was him on that day in 2016. I mean, he would have been crucified at this point if he had walked into there and gave up that 8-run spot after the emotional win on Friday night against the team leading, knowing Chris Sale's there. I mean, like, the word gutless 100% would have come out.
Yes. Well, that was a pretty gutless start by Severino. But the reason I'm not absolutely crucifying Severino is because he's the new ace of the staff. I saw that from time and time again from Tanaka. I haven't seen that from Severino. So if he goes out there and continues to barf on himself in big spots like that, yeah, I'll be throwing around that gutless word liberally, and I'll kill him on this podcast. But I'm not ready to do that yet.
Yeah, I mean, you have to look at the adjustments even that he's made from last year. He's basically a second-year guy, really a full – this is his first full long season, and he's – pretty much taken it by the balls for the majority of the time. I mean, yeah, he had some spotty outings in the beginning of the year, but, you know, like we've said, second half, the dude's been lights out, and he had a bad day. It happens.
The Yankees were so close to taking that series right from under the Red Sox nose because they stole the game on Friday night. They would have taken the third straight start from Chris Sale. Chris Sale started two previous starts against the Yankees this season, and the Yankees won both of the games. It was the first game was the one Tanaka shut them down, and the second game Severino shut them down, and then it went 16 innings. Would have been the third time. Didn't happen. So now the Yankees are, what, 7-5 against the Red Sox this year? That's still a pretty good record. There's a trend this year with the Yankees. They play to their competition. They're below 500 against teams who have below 500 records, and they're above 500 against teams with above 500 records. I don't know how to explain that other than they don't concentrate when the teams suck.
So is that a manager thing? Is that a Girardi thing in the sense that you're playing to your competition? So it's almost like taking the foot off the gas pedal when you're going and playing a team that you need to beat, and all of a sudden it's for whatever reason the pressure is on, or the importance is on when you're playing against a team that is good and above 500. I mean, to me, that's you got to look at management at some point during when you're playing guys like that.
No, quite the opposite. I would say that's a player thing, not a manager or a coach's thing. Well, players are the ones who go out there and are facing the competition, whether it's the best team in baseball or the worst team in baseball. They're the ones that need to go out and no matter what, play 100%.
But that's they're also the ones playing the good teams, and they're playing well against the good teams, but it's the players that only decide to play well against a good team. I don't understand.
Well, no,
that.
They're the half ones the who
half the time
for whatever
also,
reason.
Half the time also when Girardi's trolling out there like horrible lineups against shitty teams and then they lose. Okay, so we're gonna blame all of the bench players as well when they're going up against a shit team and they play to the competition. I mean,
well,
that happens quite a bit.
Yeah, that is a whole other issue where Girardi will rest guys to a fault for the long haul.
But that plays
you
into
can
the
argue
record.
Back and forth. You can argue back and forth if that's the right strategy or not. I'm sure he's got half a binder full of statistics that show that resting guys on certain days make sure that they're not tired come September. But what I'm saying is when you're out there playing the Toronto Blue Jays and they're in last place in your division, you can't go out and lose 2 out of 3 like the Yankees did earlier this week. That's on the players as much, if not more, as it is on the coaching staff.
Aren't we seeing a trend here? For the past 3 years when we've done this show, the Yankees have been practically a 500 team. And it seems like it just levels out at the end. It's like they get to that point and they play 500 ball for an extended period of time. And then they have weird streaks where they either lose a lot or they win a lot. But this team just, it feels like it can never get its ass out of its own way. It can never either ride momentum and take on, or over the past years, I know it's been different players and different team atmosphere, but the one standard, the one thing that has stayed the same has been the leadership of this team. And I know I have even said that Girardi, I still believe he's going to get another contract, but at some point, doesn't that have to be looked at the way that this team is sparked, whether it's against a good team, whether it's against a bad team, the way that they're managed on a day-to-day basis, the way that they take their batting practice, the way that they approach the games. I feel like this really does need to start being looked at more on a microscopic level with the management and with the leadership of this team overall.
It will be if they don't make the playoffs. And I think there's a serious chance Girardi does not come back as manager if the Yankees do not play in a playoff game this year. I'm including the wild card game. I know you don't count that as a playoff game. I'm not even sure I count it as a playoff game, but the Yankees have to at least be in a wild card game, probably hosting a wild card game.
Probably win that game. Probably win that
so,
one.
But, yeah. So you're gonna put a decision all on riding on one game. So they win that one game and then they get swept in the division series and that's fine. But if they lose
they're getting swept in the next. Now you're adding the worst possible scenario to the next round already. No, what I'm saying is they've already been in one of those games and they lost it. So that would be two.
Okay, but I think that with what this team did at the trade deadline, Girardi at least needs to get them to a wild card game. Else he's no longer the manager of this team.
I agree, but I think there's a number of things that are going to play into that. I think it's also going to be how they got to that, because right now there's a ton of teams and a million things can happen with it that could get very weird at the end of the year. There's probably six teams they're going to be hunting for two of those wild card spots. So there's going to be drama till the last day. The way that they get into the playoff, if they do get into the playoff series, and then, yeah, I think the way that they play, if it's a one-game series, it's the one-game play-in, playoff, whatever you want to call it, then, yeah, I think that game is absolutely going to be looked at the way that it's played. There's no doubt.
The Yankees have a game and a half lead over the Angels for the wild card right now. They've got games to make up too. So they've got the same number of wins. They just have fewer losses because of whatever reason the Yankees did not play as many games as a lot of teams in the first half.
And you got to give a lot of credit to Mike Scioscia for even being remotely close to the playoffs with the team that he has. That's pretty impressive in my opinion. When you lose Trout for as long as he did, they have a 97-year-old DH / first baseman in Albert Pujols, and then a bunch of kids.
Scioscia has been around so long. He's got to be the longest tenured manager, right?
Yeah, I think he must be.
And he went through so many different – I mean, that team loaded up on free agents. They brought in Pujols and Hamilton, and they also had Trout still, and they did nothing. Mm-hmm. And then – so that team has been so up and down. Yeah, I'm actually surprised he's still there.
They have no pitching. They have no
pitching. He runs that team.
They haven't had pitching in a long time.
Right. Speaking of pitching, Sabathia and Tanaka both go on the disabled list. Let's talk about CC first. So last we did a podcast, he had the MRI, but he had not been placed in the DL. He's going on the DL. Looks like he should only miss one start, though, because there was no extra damage done in that knee. The knee is basically just screwed, but it's not screwed any more than it already was.
Yeah, I don't know what we're. Is that a good thing? I mean, good because he's been
not pretty, a bad thing.
He's been pretty bad with it being the way it was. I mean, he hasn't the last three starts. He's been pretty terrible. He's only gotten into the fourth, fifth inning. It seems like he's gone back to that CC of very early in the season when he was just not executing and not able to get through games. That's not a guy that's coming out and helping your team. If he's going out there with a knee that's sore, good enough to play, but he's only getting through 4.5 to 5 innings and not good innings. He's letting up runs at the same time. That's not a guy that's helping the team. That's bad news. I think this is a bigger story than it is. I think the fact that it's that there is a knee injury, plain and simple, is a big problem.
Well, he said it was the worst it had felt since 2015 in that start against Toronto. Yeah. That it was, the pain was so unbearable he couldn't even put weight on it.
Oh, so how is it not any worse? Maybe the MRI doesn't show it's any worse because you can't see any, like, you know, you can't see the actual damage, or it doesn't look on an MRI. But the man's telling you what he feels.
I mean, you know,
that's a pretty damn honest opinion right there. The worst it's felt in 2 years.
Well, you're 36 years old now, right?
Yeah.
Sabathia's 37 years old.
I'm 37. So I know.
Oh, you're 37, so you're up there with Sabathia. You know, you get the old man aches and pains. It just happens.
Right, but when you're talking about how bad it feels, I mean, wasn't he drinking at that point too? I mean, it felt that bad when you.
Well, that's why he was drinking. He was drinking to get the pain away.
That's what I'm saying. I'm telling you, this knee is a rabbit hole. It's going to go down. It's bad things can spiral off of these knee injuries.
No, he's probably found Christ or something like that, and he's not going to go back to the bottle.
He's on the wagon or he's off the wagon.
I never know what the one is. I think isn't that a Seinfeld bit?
Yes, it is.
Tanaka on the DL, right shoulder inflammation. He said that after that start against Toronto, his entire arm from shoulder all the way down to fingertips felt fatigued. So he's on the DL. This kind of came out of nowhere on Saturday afternoon. The Yankees just slipped it in there with some other bad news with the Sabathia thing and then Jordan Montgomery getting hit in the dome piece.
I mean, talk about some bad luck with Montgomery just out there signing autographs, getting jacked by a Sandy Leone line drive, loop ball. I'm not even going to call it. It was a Sandy Leone line drive. So I'm pretty sure he was aiming for him, by the way, which also leads more to the fact that Montgomery should have absolutely plunked somebody tonight. But so we're going to talk about Tanaka being hurt, and you're going to be like, okay, see, look, Tanaka's hurt. I've been telling you he's hurt. And I'm telling you that a dead arm is not an arm injury. It's fatigue. And that's what it is.
Okay, well, all I know is that Tanaka has not been right all season, and I think it's more than just the fact that he forgot how to pitch. I think there was some sort of dead arm, tired arm injury situation going on with him. That's what I thought, that because I didn't know what else it could be, and it turns out he had a dead arm. I know you say that, you think that just popped up this week?
No, I think that happens. I think it happens to a lot of pitchers going into the tail end of the season. It happens all the time. Happened to John Lester. Happens to that. That's one of your guys on your ace list. I mean, it happens to a lot of people at the end of the year. A lot of people, especially as you have the amount of mileage that you have on a Masahiro Tanaka, a Masa arm. The Masa arm has a lot of miles on it.
This is also assuming you believe this thing, this narrative that they're saying that it's just a tired arm.
Yeah, no, I believe it. I 100% believe it. Why are they lying? They could be.
Why not?
What's the point? What does he have to gain?
Well, he's got a reputation to uphold.
He's got no reputation anymore. Nobody thinks highly of him. Where's the reputation? I mean, you can go back to Japan. Nobody will remember what happens here. They'll shower him with praise for everything he did in Japan. It doesn't matter. He's not going to get any attention here. Everybody hates him here now because he's completely screwed our season.
So people were freaking out over the Tanaka injury news, and I was upset, obviously, when I saw it come down because they just lost Sabathia. But you had to take a step back and realize it's not like they're losing Tanaka of 2016 when he was a number one pitcher.
Right.
He's been a number five pitcher all season, so fine. You take Tanaka out of the rotation, you bring him Caleb Smith, 2-1, half a dozen the other. It's just another crappy pitcher we have to watch.
It's funny how this works because I saw the same thing. I saw it was like, Masahiro Tanaka. Oh well. It was almost the same reaction I had, which is unbelievable. You want to talk about how we've come in a year. It was almost the same reaction I had to when I saw that Michael Pineda was gone for the year.
Until you just said Michael Pineda, I forgot he pitched this season.
Like I was pretty much the same reaction. Okay, well, someone else will come in and throw five innings.
Looks like it's going to be Caleb Smith, who the Yankees called up over the weekend.
Nice.
It could also be Brian Mitchell, who
toolsy
we talked
guys.
About.
Toolsy guys coming up from AAA. I love it.
Caleb Smith spelt with three A's because that's where he belongs in AAA.
No, give me the possibilities. I love potential. Love potential.
you wouldn't rather see them give the start to Bryan Mitchell, who's looked really good recently and who has actual major league stuff, versus AAA garbage college, barely could touch 85 miles an hour. I could probably hit a double off of him, Caleb Smith.
Caleb Smith hits the high 90s. You see, this is where you're mistaken. I don't know what you're watching when you're
watching.
Who
did I compare him to? Vidal Nuno?
Nuno, yeah.
And not who's even, the guy?
That's who's embarrassing.
The guy from KC? Who did I? This is another lefty in KC I compared him to.
Vargas.
Yeah, Vargas. Yeah. It's past midnight. I'm tired.
Yeah, it's bad when my memory is better than yours. Caleb Smith could do something. I swear to God he could do something. He needs to bottle it up.
See, here's where you're wrong. Caleb Smith can't do jack shit. He's not good.
Fine. All right. Maybe he's not good, but he's got a lot of pitches and he throws hard, and I like to see that. So let's roll him out.
We've seen it.
I want to.
This will be
it
the third no, start. This will be the third start for Caleb Smith. I'd rather see Bryan Mitchell get a start.
No, fine.
I'm being serious now.
So am I. I have no problem with Bryan Mitchell. Also, I think Bryan Mitchell also is a guy that is the same type of toolsy guy. I mean, he's had struggles quite a bit when he comes up and tries to start in the major leagues also.
Absolutely. But he looked pretty damn good when he filled in for Sabathia in Toronto.
Well, I think that he's probably earned it over the rest of the guys, considering that he has major league experience. He's been on the 40-man roster for quite a long time now. I do believe that he should get the job based on, you know, seniority almost, and the fact that he has earned that spot, because he's done well in AAA. He's proved that he can do it in AAA. So the next level is the major leagues, the Bronx, obviously, where he needs to show that he can take that next step. So I do believe that of the three guys that we were talking about, if we're talking about Sessa also, I'm lumping into that same mix, that Mitchell should be the guy that gets the most opportunity.
A lot of people calling for Chance Adams. It just does not seem like a possibility at this point. If the Yankees were going to start Chance Adams this season in the major leagues, I think it would have already happened.
Yeah, it really seems like they're managing his... Well, I don't think they're just... I just don't think they're happy with the way he has come to AAA and progressed for whatever reason. You know, whether it's the control or not having the control of that... the control of the strike zone, or, you know, mastering that one more pitch that they think he needs to be a major league pitcher and actually go through a lineup more than twice. They're just, I don't know. They're caught there. It seems like they're protecting this guy and they know he's not ready.
Whatever, man. You can't have pitches without pitches.
It's all good. I'll just sit down here and scream.
The bottom line is, if the Yankees don't start hitting, especially in the middle of the order with runners in scoring position, it doesn't matter who's out there pitching, because they go out there and they put up zero runs against Toronto back on Thursday when Sonny Gray started. Sonny Gray wasn't great. He gave up a bunch of two-out hits, which were back-breaking, but it was back-breaking because the offense was getting shut down by Estrada. And Estrada had been hit by the Yankees twice this season. I think he had given up, coming into that start, 13 runs to the Yankees this season before that start.
I feel like you're just waiting for Estrada to break out, though, because he last year did. It seems like he would always just shut the Yankees down.
Dude, he hadn't won. He had not won a game in the major league since May.
So he's due. That's if you believe in due.
That's one way to look at it.
That man was due. But no, yeah, he's had a horrible year. He really has. I wouldn't mind making a little waiver deal for him right now, though. He could probably bolster our staff.
Dude, they didn't put him on waivers, though.
No, I'm saying that if that were to be an option, which I could see it happening, it's one of those guys that I could see doing that.
You know,
he would make our pitching staff better, even though he hasn't won a game since May.
Yeah. The Yankees were 0-9 runners in scoring position this year. On Thursday night, more runners in scoring position struggles. What is it? What's the problem with them in runners in scoring position?
I got no answer for you. I really don't. I don't know how major league players just all of a sudden disappear when there are runners in scoring position. They're not getting the same pitches. You know, that's one way to look at it. The pitchers are definitely approaching the batters differently, and maybe they're being too aggressive and chasing bad pitches. They're not jumping on pitches early in a count. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know what their approach is, but it's not working. That's the bottom line, is it's not working. And again, that's, to me, this is an approach thing. Also, you don't have that many guys struggling and it just continues. I can see when you have, like, you know, a handful of guys that are struggling, but when you have an entire lineup of guys that struggle in runners in scoring position, I'm sorry, but I'm looking elsewhere. Also, I have to, because their other thing, the coaches have to come in at somewhere at some point. And it's usually when the batters are lost and they're struggling, that's where you need your coaches the most.
You know me. I hate just going strictly to the coach, blaming the coaches.
It's not strictly on them. It's got to be on them, though.
No, I was going to agree with you. But in this case, when it's becoming an epidemic, what the runners in scoring position thing is for the Yankees this year, the coaching staff has to be blamed a little bit. And you also have to look at Girardi or whoever on the coaching staff and say, well, how many times are you going to watch the Yankees leave a runner on third base with less than two outs or not get that big hit with two outs and runners in scoring position before you start doing something different?
Oh, you mean like practicing how to bunt? How to move the runners over? Because they don't steal, do that because steal nobody more bases, knows how to do it.
Yeah. Steal more bases. Like, how about you just... You find guys every time they don't get a runner, don't hit the ball in the air when there's a guy on third base in less than two outs. Because, I mean, Frazier did it tonight, and that's great. But it, so many times this season, it does not happen. You get a pop-up or a strikeout or a little weak ground ball to the pitcher.
It just seems like they're not doing the little things, and it's very obvious that they're not working on any of these things. And there has to be some kind of a fundamental change. When you are struggling that badly, you need to start scratching runs across. You need to start getting those runs in. When there's a guy on third base with less than two outs, especially when you are struggling as badly as you need to figure it out and do something different. And unless you're working on things like that, you can't expect a guy to go up in a box and slap to the opposite side when there is a shift on, or bunt when he hasn't bunted in 3 years because he's never practiced it either, because you're not making him work on those things. Look, there's got to be a top down, circumstances for all of these guys, and it just seems like nobody's holding them to the fire, and it's really bothering me. And if you look over the past couple of years, runners in scoring position for the New York Yankees has been a problem for a long time.
Yeah, but the players are all different.
Exactly.
So it's a completely turned. The roster has been completely turned over from even a year ago.
My point.
But it's still a problem. It's like, for whatever reason, when you put that New York Yankees uniform on, you don't know how to hit with runners in scoring position.
It's a fundamental deal. When your manager is implementing a game plan and he is all about not doing the little things, trying to get that base hit, trying to still pull the ball even though the shift is on, and it's just torturing you because there's like 18 guys on the right side of the field and they won't do anything to the left side. That's a fundamental problem. That's an issue with what the manager and what the coaching staff is telling you to do. That's a problem.
And it goes back to the beginning of the year when we were saying, it's great, all these home runs are great, Yankees are getting a ton of power from the middle of their lineup, but what happens when they don't have all this power? What happens if Aaron Judge is not superhuman? We're watching it now.
Well, even in the early in the year too, they were hitting a lot of gaps. Like, it wasn't just home runs that they were doing. Everybody was hitting the ball.
But at one point this season, they had 55% of their runs coming via the home run.
Yeah,
that's way too high.
No, no doubt. It was the early in the year when everybody was on fire. That cooled off, and then the home run ball started leaving, and that's how they started scoring runs. But look back again. This team has been built like this, and they've been taught this. You got Teixeira going up there when he was up. And there's every single time he's up, he just hits into the freaking second baseman that was sitting in short right field every single time. Go the opposite field. But he wouldn't do it. Girardi didn't make him do it. The hitting coaches didn't work on it, didn't make him do it. Why?
Teaching old dog new tricks.
It's bullshit. That's bullshit. These guys are professional baseball players. They should be able to adapt. They have hand-eye coordination enough to hit a baseball that's coming at you 100 miles an hour. I'm pretty sure you can slap one the other way.
So we've come up with a three-step plan to fix the Yankees. First, throw it Andrew Benintendi. Second, hypnotize these guys and maybe teach them how to bunt so they can hit with runners in scoring position. And three, just Chapman, throw strikes. Just throw some fucking strikes.
Throw some fucking strikes. Jesus Christ. I mean, is it really that difficult? No, it's not that difficult.
Okay.
Spoiler alert, not that difficult.
Moving away from the current Yankees on the field to the ex-captain of the New York Yankees, Derek Jeter, now CEO of the Miami Marlins. What are your thoughts on the deal officially? Him and 16 investors paying $1.2 billion for the Miami Marlins and all their diehard fans.
So did I see somewhere on the bottom line, I was watching SportsCenter in the morning, because that's what I do. I still watch SportsCenter in the mornings. And I swear to
God. Teach an old dog new tricks.
And I swear to God, I saw Jeter and Jordan.
Yeah,
is Michael Jordan on this too?
Yep. He's okay. One of the 16 investors. So okay. Jeter only put up $25 million of his own money. So he's actually one of the smaller investors in this whole deal.
Yeah, but Jordan, he's also going to be part of the baseball management.
No,
right?
he's leading baseball. The baseball operations. He's like the CEO of baseball operations of the Marlins.
So this is going to be the Marlins are going to be just a very obscure team. And now they're adding Jordan and Jeter, and they're going to be like the sweetest team in the major leagues.
So first of all, I think it's going to bring in a lot of those Miami fans that no longer watch the big three with LeBron down at the Heat. They'll just go over to Marlins Park and hopefully Jordan and Jeter are there. But Jeter is essentially going to be like the John Elway, what John Elway is for the Denver Broncos.
Yeah. But except for the John Elway won a Super Bowl with the Broncos and has actually something attached to that franchise, whereas the Marlins, not so much. They actually beat Jeter in a World Series. So it's a different animal. But
all I know is
I do believe they are going to bring a bunch of celebrities out to these baseball games.
All I know is that since Jeter bought the Marlins, Giancarlo Stanton can't stop hitting home runs.
Yeah, what is he at, 42 now? I think he tied or passed Gary Sheffield for the organization record. It's pretty ridiculous.
You forget Gary Sheffield played for the Marlins as well, one of the 13 teams he played for in Major League Baseball, because I think he was kind of a D-bag.
He was a D-bag, but he could hit everywhere he went, and that dude just raked. So 42 home runs, he had 41, I guess, with the Marlins. The guy's a Gary Sheffield Hall of Famer? Possibly.
Yeah, I think he's got some steroid implications. But who doesn't at this point?
Yeah.
Jeter, say we're looking at Jeter in 10 years. What are we thinking of Jeter at that point?
Well, you obviously can't get rid of what he has done in New York, but I think that if he is if he's still at the Marlins, which I could see it not working out. I could see the first time not working out and him thinking that this is going to be all, you know, candy canes and ice cream and it's going to be awesome, is they're just going to win immediately. I could see him struggling quite a bit there in the beginning and then leaving, going somewhere else.
No, Jeter's not a quitter. You know that.
No, but like you said, he didn't put that much money into it. So for Jeter, at least
$25 million
for him, it didn't put that much money into it.
It's like $150 bucks for you and me.
Yeah. He could stay in as an investor and do something else.
Well, I know, like, the Jordan connection. Jordan has not been a good, successful owner for the
Bobcats.
What are they now? The Bobcats
Hornets.
Now?
No, they're the Hornets again, I think.
Are they? Whatever they are. I'm not a basketball guy. But Jeter hopefully will be better. Because Jordan, it's insane that Jordan is not just thought of as the greatest basketball player of all time. That he's thought of as not that successful basketball owner and the guy who cries and he's a meme. Hopefully Jeter doesn't turn into that in 10, 15 years.
Yeah, I mean, that's the fact. How much did Jordan put into this deal? Is
he's a face. He's a minority investor.
Oh wow, yeah, that's a big deal. The I think it's going to be interesting. I do think it's going to be interesting to see how they approach it. What I think is the most interesting thing is that now Derek Jeter is Don Mattingly's boss, and how soon does the first captain want to get the hell out of there and not be under his successor. And, you know, maybe there's a job in the Bronx that's ready to be taken. I don't know.
And Donnie Baseball's made for Florida. We've already talked about this. He's got this. He's going to get the savage tan, gets the mustache going, maybe puts on a Hawaiian shirt. He's made for South Beach.
Yeah, because you think he looks like Magnum P.I. when he's got the freaking...
does.
Their uniform kind of does look like a Hawaiian shirt. I mean, it's pretty damn close.
All right. No mailbag questions this week for a couple reasons. First of all, it's 12:30 at night and we're tired. And second of all, the mailbag questions just were not very good. So you guys, you have some homework this week. Submit better mailbag questions. Also, if you want to get in touch with us, you can tweet us at Yankees Podcast. You can email us. Go to bronxpinstripes.com/podcast. That's where you got to submit those good mailbag questions. Call the voicemail line, 646-480-0342. Scott, anything you want to say before we get out of here?
I'm going to spend another 10 to 12 hour day at a hospital listening to beeps and bums and all sorts of weird noises that I'm going to have nightmares about for a while, and hopefully stay awake for another Yankees game. It's been beautiful because I've been able to take advantage of some good Wi-Fi and watch the Yankees, so I'm pumped up. A lot of people have been reaching out to me, so I really do appreciate it. Just wanted to say thank you. And yeah, man, I'm looking forward to a good week of baseball because the Yankees need it so damn badly. This wild card is absolutely 100% theirs for the taking, and they need to just forget about the division right now and go out there and just play some damn good baseball. Please, God, do not blow it. And I'm going to the Yankees-Red Sox game at Fenway on Friday night. I just found that out, and I'm pumped.
Nice. And it's also time for the Yankees to kill the sucky Mets. The Mets stink. They sold all their players. Take 3 out of 4 from the Mets this week and then go to Fenway and make something happen. All right. We'll talk to you guys in a few days.
Believe it or not, George isn't at home. Please leave a message at the beep.
I must be out or I pick up the phone.
Where could I be? Believe it or not, I'm not home.
Yo, what's up, guys? I'm coming back from Bloodwork. This is the day after Sonny Gray's start against Estrada. Holy fuck. I called it in the ninth inning. I knew right when Ellsbury got on. We're not going to send him. We're going to send him with 2 outs. What the fuck is Joe thinking? Send him early. I understand you're going to give guys swinging an odd count, but get him going. We need runners. Oh, my God. Like, you're paying him $153 million. Let him do fucking something. And the bastard.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.